Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Hello and welcome. This is Maggie. Susie can't be with us today for totally understandable reasons. So I've got to try and work out a way of saying it's just me without saying it's just me, because I know she'll beat the living daylights out of me for putting myself down if I say just me. It's interesting, isn't it? Because we do use these phrases without actually realising that they can diminish us. Oh, it's just me. I just wanted to say just this, just that. And actually, it's important. If it were just Susie, she would never say it's just Susie. She'd say, hello, it's Susie. Anyway, for today, it's going to be me answering some of your questions. When I knew that Susie couldn't join us this week, I put some questions out on Facebook and to my Tuesday evening study group, and we got some excellent ones in, terrifying ones actually, because I'm not sure I can answer them, but I'll give it a go. So we're starting off with Deborah Taylor's question, which is, I'm asking if after we die, our current spirit bodies stay in the afterlife. Like, would my grandmothers and others as I knew them in this life be available in the spirit realm, even if they've chosen a new life? And chosen a new life, I expect, means reincarnation, or perhaps even moving on to the higher spirit realms. Okay, well, I'm not an expert. And I can't give you the Orthodox Christian line because I'm not in the Orthodox Christian line. The Orthodox Christian line, I think, would be no, they go to heaven and they stay there. But loads of experience over the years tells me that people from the other side can communicate with us. And we have to be wary of that. Simply because in the natural progression of things, evolution is the norm. So when we die, the idea is that we will keep moving on. We don't sort of, do you remember that verse in Once in Royal David's City, which always drives me crazy? At the end of it, it says, and in white his children crowned, no, it's something, and there his children crowned, all in white shall wait around in heaven. And I always thought, how boring. How absolutely boring. But the more I learn and the more I read, and the best book in the world about the afterlife that I heartily recommend is Helen Graves' Testimony of Light. It is a channeled book. It was published in the 1960s and it's been tested out and verified by many, many people. It's an extraordinary treatise on what the afterlife actually is like, and the fact that there is no total heaven and there's no total hell, but there are certainly all sorts of areas in between where we will go according to how happy we were in this life. Not about whether we were good or bad, but how happy. And there are also definitely hospital areas in the afterlife, because our spirit body is deeply affected by serious and chronic diseases in this life, and we do need we need care in the afterlife to get better. But when it comes to whether your grandmother is communicating with you, first thing always to remember is that people in the afterlife are not necessarily any different from how they were in this life. So if your granny was wonderful and marvellous and kind and loving, yes, her soul, her spirit in the afterlife, no matter which level she's gone to or which level she's working to, will be basically exactly the same. So if you've got good advice from your grandma in this life, you can get the equivalent advice from your grandma in the afterlife. But why is she talking to you? Why isn't she moving on? And why isn't she taking care of her own spiritual development? That's always a question to ask. So if you do get messages from the other side, it's really important to ask for signs following. So I got a message from somebody in the afterlife, say, and it seems to be perfectly sensible, but I'll say, I want signs following, please. And a sign following will be something that comes in the next 48 hours that confirms that this was good advice. Perhaps somebody else gives you exactly the same advice, or perhaps there's some sign which is representative of the soul that sent you forward the good advice. You've also got to consider that if this information is coming through from a medium, that it's going to be coloured by the medium's own character and personality. No matter how good a medium is, they can only interpret according to their own vocabulary and their own understanding of life. After Henry, my first husband, died, I did go and see a medium. This was yonks and yonks ago, before ordination, before many, many things. And he was an atheist, and I'd been told on his deathbed that he wasn't going to heaven because he wasn't a Christian. Good old hospital chaplain, who turned out to be an angel because he changed my life, because without him I wouldn't have started on the journey that I've been on this last 30 years. But anyway, I went to see this medium, and the first one I went to see said, I can't bring him through. He's in the hospital lands in the other land. I can bring through his grandmother if that's of any interest to you, but I can't bring him through. And that was incredibly clear and honest, with still being very disappointing, but still, I was very impressed. The other thing she said was, can you tell me why I'm covered in brown dogs with floppy ears? Can you send them away, please? And I'd said, on the train here, I had been wondering whether dogs went through to the other side as well. And she said, well, they do, so stop it, send them away. So I think she was pretty genuine, because she picked up something and a message was coming through to show me that hounds did go through to the afterlife. When I went to the second medium, she did bring the essence of Henry through. That's quite clear. He was about 6 months after he died. And I'd gone to see her for exactly the same reason. I wanted to know if he was okay. I had sensed him around after he died for a while, but then he moved on or vanished or disappeared. And I know she brought him through, because he was just as annoying dead as he had been when he was alive. Now, I used that in my comedy, but it was true. Henry used to have a little habit of clicking me under the chin with his index finger curled round and going, and I hated it. I always hated it. And the medium got up and came over to me and said, I've got this strong impulse to do this. And she went and clicked under my chin in exactly the same way as Henry did. So there was definitely an essence of Henry coming through. But it was also very clear that what came her through from him was Henry's persona and ego, not his pure essence. Because Henry could be a bit bossy, and he always knew what was right, and we were very equivalent in those days in that way. But I got myself a puppy, and the medium was bringing through Henry advising me on how to feed my dog. Now, Henry, as far as I know, had never had a dog, knew nothing about dogs, and was telling me all sorts of really annoying things on how to look after a dog. And it was later that I found out that the medium herself had dogs and liked to advise people about dogs. So I don't know which bit was genuine and which bit was her projection. But definitely what came through was not the higher self of the man I had married. So that's another thing to consider if stuff comes through. And I do watch a TV program sometimes. I catch it accidentally. Well, no, I'm fibbing. Sometimes I do watch it on purpose, because it's quite moving. A program on Quest Red called Long Island Medium. And I don't watch any of the stuff about her and her family, because that's so proper stuff. But there's no doubt about it. She brings through the essence of people exactly as people knew them, but with a little bit of love added in. Now, obviously, there will have been love between families, but the message is always about reassuring, saying you did the right thing, everything's okay, and I'm all right. Now, that could be the departed person, or it could be their guardian angel, or it could be your own guidance disguising itself to give you comfort. Nobody will ever know, but if the message is loving, accept it. Always ask for follow-on signs, even if the medium seems to be good. Always ask for a follow-on sign. And if you're getting a message directly in your head without going to a medium, I would always recommend that you ask quite clearly, do you love and serve the love that created this universe? I personally would say, do you love and serve the All Holy One? But that's because I call God the Holy One or God, and I don't have a problem with that. Because quite often there are mischievous spirits. They may be other earthbound souls, or they could be elementals. The elementals are real and they are amoral. I don't mean they're immoral, they're amoral. They have no truck with morality at all, and they are mischievous. A Midsummer Night's Dream is spiritually accurate. There are plenty of fairies and divas and sprites that will mess with our heads for the fun, sheer fun of it. So always ask of a message whether it comes from the fount of all goodness, the Holy One. And the thing about the elementals is they will answer truthfully or go away. So if you don't get a resounding yes, disregard that message, because it almost certainly is somebody messing with your head. And it may even be you messing with your head, because we do want to communicate with our loved ones after they've died a lot of the time. So I think in a nutshell, my answer would be yes, your grandmother who's dead can communicate with you, but it's always worth wondering why your grandmother is communicating with you. Why is she looking back to the earth instead of moving on in her own journey? What was her spiritual development like in her lifetime? And also, is what you're hearing kind and to your benefit? Because if it isn't, if it's your grandma telling you off, then she has no right to be doing that. And she probably isn't doing that. And if it is your grandmother, then I heartily recommend that you do the meditation called the Chapel of Liberation, which is on our Patreon page. I will put up the link there. It's absolutely free and you can download it without giving us any money whatsoever. But I'm not going to do it here because I've got other questions to answer. But the Chapel of Liberation, which was channeled by the very same Frances Banks who spoke after her death to Helen Graves, hence the book Testimony of Light. This was channeled directly to my bishop, who was really taken with the book. And that was an incredible grace, in that I was given it by a total stranger in Australia after I ran away there after Henry died. And that was an utter piece of being looked after, absolute piece of being looked after. So the Chapel of Liberation is a way that you go to ensure that somebody you know of who has died has gone all the way through to the happy lands on the other side. There isn't hell. But if we haven't been happy in our life, we can get stuck in that same level of energy, which is a kind of, do you know what I mean by that? So if anybody's died that you know of who wasn't happy, do the Chapel of Liberation. Because even if they don't need it, it is a gift of mercy and love to the world. And before we move on to the second question, I have to say the all-important thing that my great Kabbalah teacher taught many, many years ago, which is do not believe a word I say. Just because you're listening to a podcast from somebody who's allegedly spiritual, I do write books, but you know what I mean, doesn't mean to say that anything I say is right for you. You know inside yourself at the soul level what is right for you. Be careful that you don't let your ego reject words from a spiritual teacher, but always test them out. Always test them out. Always. There's many a time that I haven't, and I've fallen flat on my face because I've been mistaken. Always test out your spiritual teacher. Never, ever put them on a pedestal. And if they want to be on a pedestal, walk away immediately. Okay, question number two. Oh, it's a brilliant question, and there's so many answers to this one. It comes from Mensa. And the question is, what do you do on the really, really bad days? Well, we have to define what is a really, really bad day, because there can be days when you're angry, days when you're grieving, days when you're depressed, and days when you're just meh, which might be your astrology, biorhythms, menopause, hormones, who knows what. But generally, if you're for any reason, the first thing to do is move, because changing the energy is really, really important. If you can get up and go for a walk, if you can get out into the countryside, please do. And if you're overworking and you're absolutely stressed out at your computer, go to bed. Change the energy. Toss things around. Move around. It's really, really important, if there is a clogged energy, and you can always feel a clogged energy, to move, because that will help with the clogging immediately. It's a purely Kabbalistic teaching too, not purely as in solely, but it is a Kabbalistic teaching, because the Tree of Life has three columns, vertical columns, the central column, which is consciousness, the right-hand column, which is, in a nutshell, action, and the left-hand column, which is, in a nutshell, containment. If you get caught in the containment column without the consciousness, you will feel sluggish and guilty and grieving and sorrowful and unhappy and blah. So you need to move. And if you're caught on the right-hand column, which is do, 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 more, 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 act, which is just as out of balance in its own way, then you need to slow down and rest. And best advice in the world, if you're stressed out, if you possibly can, is go to bed. Go and have a nap. And if you can't have a nap, at least listen to something calming and beautiful and cheerful. But not too cheerful, not the kind of cheerful that's going to make you want to throw your phone or whatever you're listening to across the room. Balance it out as carefully as you can. If I'm miserable or unhappy, I will go to YouTube and I will look at old episodes of Whose Line Is It Anyway, because they always make me chuckle. When I was having chemotherapy all those years ago, when I had to have chemotherapy to save my life, and I'm very grateful to it, though it wasn't the cure, but it was extremely valuable at the time, I really annoyed people in the department, because I was watching videos of comedy on YouTube with headphones, but of course I was chuckling. And there was a general view that you shouldn't be happy there. But I thought it was really quite important that I was. When it's a really bad day because something's gnawing at me, and things do gnaw at me, I've Taurus with a Scorpio moon and Cancer rising, so I can get very down and deep into if I've had a snotty email or something like that. 9 times out of 10, I've actually read it wrong. The first time I'll read something like that, I will go into reactions. So what I will usually do with that kind of really bad day is first take some space away from it. And then when I know I've come to myself, read it again clearly. And then what I'll do is write the swingingly bad-tempered, nasty, horrible reply that I'd like to send to start with, but I do not write it as an email, because if I did that, I might accidentally send it. I'll write it in a Word file. So sometimes just get the anger, the depression, the grief out. Julia Cameron is brilliant at this with her Artist's Way book, which encourages you to write morning pages, which is 3 A4 pages of freehand written, just stream of consciousness, whatever comes out of you. When I first did it, I stopped doing it because I didn't want to face all that negativity, which really tells you everything you needed to know about the levels of negativity that were stored in my psyche that really wanted to come out. It is helpful. You just literally write down, and it may well be that to start with, you just write down, this is bollocks, this isn't going to help, I don't know what this is, oh for God's sake, I'm fed up to the back teeth with this, this is horrible, and I hate my mother, and I hate this, and I hate that, and I hate the other. But just imagine how freeing that is for your inner child, or the inner part of the ego, which has felt so upset by something for so, so long. So expressing that can be very useful. Sometimes it makes you feel worse, but sometimes it makes you feel a lot better. And if it makes you feel worse, at least you know that there's something there that does need to be addressed. And I'd really suggest that you work on that with either a therapist or an acupuncturist or a homeopath or a counsellor or your best friend. One of the reasons why we need all these therapies is we don't talk at great depth with our best friends so often as we used to, because we've got so many things that can distract us. You can have a whole conversation about what was on the telly or what you watched on Netflix or what you picked up from Amazon in the last week and never actually touch on life and what hurts. And also another aspect of that morning pages or talking it over with a friend is something Susie and I have said quite a few times on this podcast, which is, how do I know what I think till I hear what I say or hear what I write? Once you're starting to get it out, you go, I actually feel like that. I didn't know I feel like that. I didn't know that. I didn't know I was that mad or that depressed or that angry or that cross. Because we are trained by society to squash down these things. Women in particular. And it is an old saying, but it's basically true, that men aren't allowed to cry and women aren't allowed to be angry. And this has been trained into me. So it's very good for me to get angry. I'm not very good at it even now at 65, but it's incredibly healthy for me to be angry. And when I get angry, I do cry, because that's the old training that comes in. There's another amazing book I want to recommend to you. It's very old. It's 1970s, I think, by a woman called Anne Wilson Schaff. And she wrote a book called When Society Becomes an Addict. It really is an extraordinary book that just highlights how societies and the system and the world trains us. It's not a conscious control thing. It's not like the Illuminati putting us down, but it is something we need to be very aware of how society operates in the West. So I'd actually like to read you some notes I made from the book some time ago, but every time I go back to them, I go, whoa! So Anne defines society as the white male system. Well, we've talked about patriarchy on this podcast a lot of the time, and it is quite clear that we've lived in a patriarchal system for a very long time. The reasoning behind this system and how it works is that it believes and teaches that it is the only system. It's the only valid system. Simultaneously, it teaches that it's superior. And it teaches that it knows and understands everything. A lot of this came from what we call the Enlightenment, the age of the rational, where we threw the baby out with the bathwater when it came to God. Because, yes, there was much that was bad and still is, but there was much that was good, and the baby tends to have gone too. So anything that doesn't belong to the white male system, which knows and understands everything, is invalid. And this system is, in the system, it is totally possible to be logical, rational, and objective the whole time. And this system defines God as the ultimate controller. So you can see we're in a bit of a mess with that one. How this works, it's supported by what Anne calls the female reactive system, which supports all of the above, because women get their strokes from supporting all the above. What she is teaching is the importance of coming out to an emerging female system, which is a system of process, not one that's stopped. She said if women stopped living in the reactive female system, the white male system would collapse and each has to have the other to exist. And this is very depressing for all of us. And in a funny way, that's the whole point of it, because, as Anne calls it now, she calls it the addictive system. She says the purpose of it is non-living. You don't die, but you don't live either. And because you don't live, you need addictions to feel alive. And marketing fuels this the whole time. You know, the drinking, the partying, the dancing, all these lovely things, you know, the great TV shows, the box sets that you can just imbibe every evening, and I've done it myself. All of these are ways of making us not live. That's quite a shocking concept, isn't it? So as Anne says, addiction is any process over which we're powerless. It's progressive and it stops us living. We're vaguely aware of what's going on, but addictive thinking is that it's everything else but us. And as it isn't us, we can't sort it. And we'll go, if others would only behave, we wouldn't have to retaliate. And you can see that in all the world at the moment. It's exactly what's going on in the Ukraine with Russia. Well, if they would only behave, we wouldn't have to retaliate. You can just hear it, can't you? And one of the primary support systems of this addictive system is codependency. And I was a codependent for many, many years, and I'm still in recovery from that, I think. All codependents are people who are in relationship with an alcoholic or an addict of some sort. Primary addictions cause secondary ones, and codependency is a secondary addiction. In a way, codependents are good Christian martyrs. They're sufferers, they're saviours. And Anne actually puts this statistic in. I don't know if it's still true, but she said her research, and she has got medical training, was that 83% of nurses were firstborn children of addicts and therefore codependents. And she also says, the need for voluntary service on your CV is a sign of an addictive system. Just think about that for a moment. Whenever we need to be good and to be seen to be good, it's a response to an addictive system. And of course, codependents aren't encouraged to get well because the whole system depends on them. Without codependents, charities wouldn't raise money. They simply wouldn't. And I was exactly like that after Henry died. I went into healing because I didn't want other people to have to suffer as I did and as he had. I wanted to change things. Well, that sounds like living, doesn't it? But no, it was actually stopping everybody else going through the wake-up experience that I'd actually had. Sometimes it's very important for us to go through these really difficult experiences. That sounds harsh, but it's true. So an awful lot of our depression, unhappiness and our bad days are as a result of non-living. And of course, a lot of antidepressants stop us feeling anything. If they stop the depression, they also stop the joy. And that is an absolutely primary way of not living. And Anne says, our primary addiction in this society is to powerlessness and non-living. So don't be noisy, don't be excited, don't be sensual. To be alive is bad and non-living is good. And the ideal woman is neither sexual nor alive. So she says choice one for an addict is not to die from their addiction. And choice two is not to live. Because choosing not to die is not the same as choosing to live. Choosing to live means changing the system or working outside of the system. So most of us basically do live as a kind of zombie life where we don't really live. We don't do all the things we want to do because we're tied down by the need to earn money, the need to send our children to the right school. All these needs which kind of control our lives and which we think are incredibly important. And how we demonstrate this is that we accept toxic air, we accept toxic water, we accept the destruction of the planet, we accept so many things that we know in our hearts are not good. But those who choose to live, living fully is seen as being out of control, which is unbearable to the system. And Anne finishes off this section by saying, codependency is an addiction to another person or persons and their problems, or to a relationship and its problems, or to a situation and its problems. Codependence proves that one has embraced the addictive system and everything that it possibly implies. And anything with a hero who saves you is an addictive process. Now, that's some pretty fierce stuff, as you can imagine. My goodness. I will be very interested to hear your thoughts if you've listened all the way through on this. And I'm going to close. We've just done the two questions today, but my goodness, they were good questions. When I'm feeling really down or when anything is out of kilter, I always go into the Hawaiian healing process of Ho'oponopono, which is very simple. It's four phrases. I love you. I'm sorry. please forgive me, thank you. Now, I was taught that these were phrases that we say to God, and people have often said to me, I don't want to have to apologise to God, which shows a huge issue with the relationship with God, who's obviously an old white man in the sky who's judging you. But in fact, a deep, deep humility is God's relationship with us and our relationship to the Holy One. And we can't even think about getting there until we've healed our own inner child, our own inner ego. So in fact, when you repeat those words, you're talking to yourself, because the human ego doesn't actually know that anything outside itself exists. So every word you speak, it hears as if it came from somebody else. And every word anybody else speaks, it hears as if it came from you. It takes everything on and takes it all really personally. So saying to yourself, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Yourself, your ego, not yourself, your ego, will take that as it could be your mother apologising, your father, it could be the friend at school who fell out with you, it could be that rat bag of a boss you had or a bad co-worker. All it knows is that somebody is offering it love, and that love is incredibly powerful. I always advise people to get into the habit of saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. In whichever order you like, and you can just go, I love you, I love you. You don't have to do the other bits if they upset you at all. Start off with, I love you, I love you, I love you. And get it so that that's your default phrase when your mind is just pandering along on its own. You know how we have songs on the brain? And we have thoughts that we repeat again and again. Deepak Chopra says 97% of the thoughts we think today are the thoughts we thought yesterday and the day before and the day before. So changing our thoughts is incredibly important for neural pathways and rebuilding them. And it's also incredibly calming and soothing and comforting and lovely to just wrap your arms around yourself and say, I love you, I love you, I love you. And to the deepest truth is that we get the bad days because we haven't loved ourselves. When we do deeply and truly love ourselves, we deeply and truly love everything else. We don't have to like it, but we love it and we can accept it, and depression is far, far less likely. So that's my Tupenoth for today, for this week. Hopefully Susie will be back with us next week. I'd love to hear your responses to Anne Wilson Schaff and the addictive system, and whether it's made you go, wow, or what, just like it did me. And I'll see you next week. Thank you so much for listening.